The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
Now, every January, there seems to be a story or several stories in the news of restaurant after restaurant shutting up shop. This year, there were 8 closures in the first 8 days of the month, sparking questions about the overall health of the industry. Our first guest this morning is a man who has been a star of the Irish restaurant trade for some time. He opened his restaurant, Chapter One, in 1993 and went on to achieve a Michelin star, survive a recession and train a number of award-winning chefs in the process. He's originally from Cork and his name is now synonymous with high-end dining in Dublin. Ross Lewis, you're very welcome to the programme. High-end dining, how does that fit with you?
I'm tired already listening to the intro. High-end dining, yeah. I've been in the industry for everyone starts off, first of all, open a restaurant like they do, like I did, and you're young. And essentially, the first thing you want to do is you want to survive. And, you make your way. And if you're kind of built a certain way, you might want to kind of, step up the ladder, step up the standard, et cetera, et cetera. And I suppose that's kind of the way I am. And I suppose I was one of these kind of people who was born with the kind of a genetic coding that if I'm going to do something, I'd like to do it properly. So I suppose really that's how I ended up kind of at the end of the market I'm at. It was constant looking at yourself and trying to improve and so on and so forth. So kind of, yeah.
And sticking with that and getting better at it. When you look at the headlines about restaurants closing in Dublin, I mean, how would you interpret those?
Well, I suppose the early signs aren't great. I suppose the first thing you'd have to say about the marketplace at the moment is it's greatly overheated. And I suppose there's a number of reasons for that. But, we're in the era of kind of certainly a lot of young chefs. They want to have a go at opening their own place. Now, for instance, Richard, if I would ask my chefs, why did you get into the industry? Most of them, the first thing they'd say is, well, I want to open a restaurant. And you might ask them on what other reasons. And if you're lucky, they might say to you second or third, well, I really love food. So that's to kind of give you an idea of the mindset. And it's very unique to our business. But,
But is that necessarily a big mistake? Because in the past, before the era of the celebrity chef, perhaps there were lots of really, really good chefs that wanted to work in restaurants, not necessarily own a lot of their own restaurants. And they might not make the best managers. Whereas if people want to go into business, they're thinking of it as a business from the start.
Yeah, they are. And of course, these are the kind of traps that people can fall into. I mean, openings now are inflamed hugely by social media. And there's a greater amount of food press and so on and so forth. So in some ways, you get this kind of a fawning effect. And I suppose people feel that because, they're getting all this attention day one. And, for example, when I went to Chapter One, I think it was about 2 years before I actually got a write-up. There were about 2 or 3 food critics in the city at the time. Now you're likely to get your all 5 or 6 main write-ups within 2 or 3 weeks of opening. So whereas before it was a slow start and you built up, now it's actually the opposite. Everyone's getting it at the start. But then surviving to year 2, 3, 5, 7, 10. Now that's a different. That's very different.
Now there are different reasons why different places close, and we've seen lots of different reasons even in the opening weeks. But in a general sense, what can you say about the state of the industry? Is it maybe people expanding too much too soon? Is it the VAT issue, which the industry lobby has talked about a lot? What is it?
Well, the first thing, as I said, the market is greatly overheated. The reason is there's kind of institutional money coming in for the first time. There's big groups setting up, such as the Ivy, that's backed by a big fund from the UK. Everyone from Marco Pierre White coming here. There's the Café on Seine group, there's the Press Up group. So you're seeing big groups, you're seeing young chefs starting off with kind of parental money and so on and so forth. So the marketplace is very hot. So what happens in a hot marketplace is that the resource is stretched. So it's a supply and demand situation. So the biggest cost in my checkbook is, of course, labour. So at 33 to 37% or even up to 40% of the expense of a restaurant, you can imagine when supply and the resource isn't there, then the price of the labour goes up.
That's a major strain. There has been a lot written about
chefs and front of house, yeah. I mean, there was up to a 7,000 chef shortage in 2018, God knows what it is now. So that's the first aspect. That makes it incredibly hard. And then, of course, you have all these other inflationary costs. And so, you know, in a restaurant, the business model for a restaurant, it takes in all this supply from services to food to labour, et cetera, et cetera. And at the end of it, there's a kind of a thin line. And if you're going in to set up a business and you might be a young chef and you just don't look at your terms and conditions, you know, for rent, and next thing you know, the rates have gone up, labour costs have gone up, and just about everything else. Now, the VAT...
A lot of people, Ross, going in into restaurants and they might look at pricing and they might look at menu and they might look at the wine list and what they're paying for wine, and they'll say, yes, there's a lot of overheads running a place like this, but there's a big markup here as well, isn't there?
Well, there isn't. See, that's the point, because by time, you know, if somebody comes in and buys a bottle of wine for X amount, there's 23% VAT in it. You know, there's VAT on food. So, you know, of every 100 euros you take, you probably get about 86 out of that. And then the costs start adding up. And they're just such a huge amount of them. And so at the end of the day, if a couple of them are wrong and your rent is too high and your turnover isn't big enough and your labour costs are all high, you have all these inflationary costs that are just getting higher and higher. So, you know, the thin end of the wedge could be 3 or 4% in some cases. If you're operating healthily, it could be 12 or 14%. And it depends on the model that you operate. So a low-cost model, a middle market that's selling pizza and pasta could be returning 15 to 17%, whereas a top-end restaurant, like, you know, if I would say it's people in chapter one,
yeah.
How many chefs do you think I have there in the kitchen? They'd say, about 4 or 5. And you open the swing door and they see 11, you know, chefs running around the place, kind of busying themselves and running from section to section, knocking out the food. They're just quite surprised. So, like, for instance, I have 38 staff, you know, and you have everyone you have people who take the bookings, you have kitchen porters, you have all this background staff. Then you have, you know, a whole host of front of house staff and then kitchen staff, et cetera, et cetera.
And there's a lot of overhead.
Yeah, so a lot of them are hidden to the customer, I guess, you know.
You've seen with Chapter One since 1993 huge amount of change in the restaurant scene in Dublin, but also in consumer tastes, what we eat, how we eat, and of course the big one now is around healthy eating and this suggestion about putting calorie counts on every item on the menu. Yeah. How do you feel about that?
Oh, yeah, that's, you know, this came out some years ago, Minister Joe O'Reilly, and the industry kind of stood back and was horrified. And as we're talking about all these pressures on businesses, you know, this is just another one. I mean, for me, it's kind of nanny state. I mean, what we do, you know, there's two parts to what I do. One is there's a creative element, and the other side is the machine that puts out the production. And, you know, what that will do is, you know, it'll really stifle creativity and seasonality. So, for instance, you know, if you're supposed to work out how many calories are on your menu, you know, do you really want to walk into a restaurant where you want to forget about life for a while? And you want to have a nice meal with a friend, a colleague, or your partner? Do you really want to be reading about calories on the menu? It's a little bit unenforceable in the sense that how do you work it out? And
do you not see that it would be useful for a lot of people? A lot of people might want it and it might help them to draw attention to what they're eating and how they're eating. And also, if it's suggested as something that might become law, you'd have to do it.
Well, firstly, it's like how do you work it out? They give you a means of calculating it yourself, and they say, you know, every food item you hear, this is the calorific value. So if you're using 2 grams of something, it's this. And so 4 grams of pork, is it fatty pork? Is it lean pork? Et cetera, et cetera. You know, when you're putting food on a dish in a restaurant such as Chapter One, you might be putting, you know, an olive oil dressing on it. You use a teaspoon. You put it on according to the proportion of the balance that's needed for the dish, if you understand what I'm saying.
It's not all, you know, pre-cooked, so to speak.
3 grams, or is it 9 grams, or what is it?
What would it cost you to do it?
Well, we worked it out before at that time. Now, to give you an example, some of my dishes had up to 35 different ingredients on them, you know. So a vinaigrette or a sauce could have 8 or 10 ingredients. So the amount of time it would take to work it out, you'd want somebody following you around. So what happens when the fishmonger rings and says, you know, I've got wild sea trout today, but I don't have turbot. I have to change the garnish because I can't put the same garnish on, you know, wild sea trout as turbot, because they're two different fish, two different flavours. One's oily and one's not, et cetera, et cetera.
So you'd make the case you couldn't do it, basically.
Yeah.
Or you wouldn't do it.
And you know what? How would you enforce it? And do you think they're going to be exactly accurate? If the industry has 8,000 chef shortage, how in the God's name are we going to be running around, you know, trying to work out how many calories are in a la carte restaurants? Now, let me say it to you, it depends on how they enforce this. And I know in the States, in New York City, they were talking about, you know, enforcing it for restaurants or chains have more than 3 or 5 restaurants. And if the food that they offered was uniform. So I'm not suggesting, Richard, that you might not want to know if you're going into a fast food restaurant and you're replacing your one of your main meals of the day with fast food. I think you should know how much calories in it.
Useful.
The second thing is, if you go into a specialty coffee shop and they're wanting a maple syrup coffee for Christmas and you're getting a half a litre of it, maybe you should know that there's 1,500 calories in it. But I could just say...
Well, to some extent, it depends on the restaurant, the kind of menu they have and so forth. In relation to Chapter One, one of the things that you've done over the years is it has become... quite a popular place for very well-known celebrities. You've had some very famous people call in. Barbara Streisand. Did you cook for Barbara Streisand?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. She had when she was over doing a concert, she came in after the concert. I think they all got delayed getting back. I think it was in Kildare, was at the concert, and they all got stuck in the mud. But she came and, you know, we had
who was she with? Was she with a group?
She was with just a group, small group of 4 or 5 of obviously colleagues and so on and so forth. So yeah, she came up and she had her dog, her poodle was there.
Oh, the dog
came. Yeah, he had a rare fillet of steak cut up. Yeah,
the dog had the fillet of steak.
Indeed, yeah. Cut him up and
he didn't send it back.
Enjoyed that, you know.
Like that,
enjoyed that nicely. Yeah, while he was wearing his diamond dog's collar and so on and so forth. But you know, it's a great industry. Look, it's lots of very interesting people come in through the doors. We actually had Ridley Scott in during the week.
Film director Ridley Scott
exactly,
was in, right?
Yeah, I think he's making the movie on Market Pierre White, which is kind of quite up. Yeah,
in Dublin. So that's,
I don't know if they make it in Dublin, but anyway, he was there. But you know, we've had lots of various people.
Al Pacino was in.
Al Pacino, yeah. Was great. He was over, he's been in twice, and he was over to get an award from Trinity, I think, the first time. And he was a group of about 12 or 14. And I was very keen to meet him. Now, I wouldn't be kind of a starstruck type of person, but I could see that, you know, he travels with a couple of people that he can kind of rely on. They're kind of old friends, kind of wouldn't sell him out type of thing. And so I'd nudged near one of them and I says, you know, any chance of meeting the big fella? And he says, you know, I don't know, maybe at the end of the dinner. And I was kind of saying, I said, I'm not going to get to meet this guy. So I said to the waiter, I said, listen, when he goes to the toilet next, let me know. And I was kind of waiting there from when he came back. And I sat there and I said, Mr. Pacino, I said, I just want to welcome to Chapter One, Ross Lewis. My name, Chef Patron, I want to let you know that you're the most important man in the house tonight besides myself. Would you like to have your picture taken with me? So he laughed.
and suddenly it was done before he realised.
It was done, yeah. So it's great, you know. It's a great business. Very interesting. You meet great diverse amount of people from, you know, writers and artists, actors and so on and so forth.
You'd like to keep going? What about expanding?
Keep
things as they are?
Yeah, I mean, I can't be talking to you about all these inflationary pressures of the restaurant industry and be saying I want to keep expanding. That wouldn't be my métier. You know, I've been with Chapter One 27 years. We keep moving it on. If you don't, you don't survive. It's a very competitive business, as I said. It's hyper-competitive. And, you know, all my energy goes into moving that on. You know, you're privileged to be even employ one person in your career. And, you know, I'm privileged. I have 60 employees. But it's not an easy thing to do, and to take, you know, 60 different people from different backgrounds and of diverse ways of thinking, and to align them all and motivate them and keep them focused. You know, it's a full time job, to say the least. And so that I'm happy to keep focusing on that and do, you know, and do as good a job as I can.
Well, you look like you're enjoying it. Ross Lewis of Chapter One, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.